Are you someone who loves Christmas? To the point that you really hate to take the decorations down, even if it is January 15th? If you answer yes, you are a Noelophile. And so am I. And this show is for you. Hi, I'm Dot Cannon, also known as Noella Noelophile. And welcome to my Noelophile podcast. On this show, we're going to be talking about Christmas in general and California Christmas in particular.
I've always told people the choir is the face of the organization, but the workshops and the programs are the heart. We are pulling together a beautiful piece written by Stevie Wonder. From the get-go, it's saying it's truly asking for peace, but it's also asking us to wake up a little bit. In fact, I hate even calling Urban Voices a performance group or a music activation group.
A time-honored Christmas time tradition is just about to happen in Los Angeles, and you're invited. On Tuesday afternoon, December 24th, the 65th annual LA County Holiday Celebration begins at 3 o'clock at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. This free 3-hour spectacular showcases a wide range of artists and performing groups whose talents reflect the various communities of Los Angeles. Among the 28 featured performers and groups will be the Urban Voices Project, a choir made up of men and women surviving homelessness on Skid Row. But that description barely does them justice, as their music empowers the performers and their audiences, and 2024 marks their 10th anniversary of transforming lives through music. Singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and arranger Liav Sofer is the founder and artistic director of Urban Voices Project.
Liav, how did you first get inspired to make music your life's work?
Oh, man. Well, the acorn fell straight down from the tree. My mom is a musician, and she is a singer. She's what we call in the Jewish community a cantor. So she is a clergy that's like a musical minister for Jewish communities. And I grew up, you know, being in the shadow of a musical parent who forced me to play piano, and I hated it. I really hated learning music. And it's so funny because I threw temper tantrums for like a year or two. And finally, they let me quit. But I learned one song. I learned On Top of Old Smokey. You know that song?
Oh, yeah. I won't sing it because you'll probably run out of the room with your hands over your ears.
So what's funny is that I took that song and I played it over and over and over again growing up as a kid for like years. And I did have fun. I did learn enough to read. So I started reading through the piano books and on my own pace, which was horrible. But, you know, I had fun kind of not having to practice something, just reading something new. What happened is by the time I was in middle school, I was a better sight reader than some college level pianists because I had done so much sight reading, just trying to keep flipping to almost a new song every day for years. So even though I never had incredible technique, I could read faster than most. And by high school, I was accompanying both at high school level ensembles like the choir, but I was also accompanying things, community choirs and things outside of the community. I learned I had a voice and I can sing in senior year because the choir teacher that I accompanied for forced me to fill her missing baritone gap. And then turns out I can sing and had me audition for singing auditions for different honor groups and for the Southern California and Cal State and Allstate California Honor Choir. And I pursued, by the time I got to college, I also studied clarinet too. And that was the one thing I did take lessons in. And so I was thinking I'm going to do clarinet undergrad, vocal undergrad, and I'll do a jazz piano master's. And I was thinking I'm going to try all three of these things. And that's been my life ever since, is I've just never been able to really stick to one thing. But as the story goes on, college, I had a really beautiful experience at the Bob Cole Conservatory in Cal State Long Beach. They were very nurturing of my confused, you know, sense of pulls and visions and ambitions as far as what I wanted to be. And they just supported me no matter what I wanted, whether it was playing piano or singing, etc., jazz, classical. But by the time I graduated, I really ended up finding the place I fit the best was choir directing and singing in the end of the day. So I got a job at the Colburn School, teaching voice and continue to sing. And I do a little bit of everything still to this day. And I still play keys. And I still play a little bit of clarinet. But a lot of the work these days has been singing or choir directing.
What's really fun is when you said that you were a kid that threw tantrums not to practice the piano, and anybody watching you playing that keyboard for Urban Voices Project, you look like you're having a really good time.
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny because with piano, I never really approached the technical side of it, but I think that I wouldn't tell anyone to do it the same way I did. I would tell them they should practice, they should take the lessons. But I think also part of it was saying yes and not being scared to make mistakes. And I took a lot of work as a pianist, not always being fully qualified for what I was doing and saying yes to. And then in the moment at the you would catch up to yourself a little bit. I always push your limits, basically. And so that's one of the reasons why I feel like I enjoyed that path. It was self-guided, but it still got to enjoy the journey a little bit, you know.
How did you come to say yes to using your music to minister to the homeless community in Los Angeles?
So, you know, when I was 17 years old, I recorded this song. It's still on YouTube. It's called Timeless. And if you Google it, it's just Timeless by Liav Sofer. And it was me thinking, I want to be a singer-songwriter. I had a singer I idolized named Jamie Cullum. He's a British kind of jazz rock singer-songwriter, pianist. And I thought, I want to be him. And I wrote the song and I put it out and it got viral. And if you know YouTube back in, this would have been 2007, YouTube was still really new. And if you got, you know, 100,000 views, it was considered incredibly successful. Versus these days, you know, you can get 100 million views and it's still old news by next week. So the video went semi-viral. We got 800,000 views. It was almost a million. And at the time, that was a big deal. And I got a phone call from Randy Newman, who wanted to produce. He said, if you can write, I need you to write 20 songs like this, and then I'll consider producing an album. And I'm 17 years old, literally planning college auditions and college applications and whatnot. And what ended up happening was I had this moment of thinking, well, I can either skip college and do this, or I should go the safe route. And I decided I went to go the safe route, and I did not return his email. And I always, it's a pivot moment of like, what if? But I also think that it was the moment that I realized that I don't think fame is why I'm here. I don't think that hustle and that burden is really the point of what I do. I think that as I went along and I went to college, and I noticed choir was a big thing for me because community was a big thing for me. And how music connects people to each other, that was the first layer of me realizing who I am as a community-based musician. And then when I was at the Colburn School, it's a school of high excellence. It's kind of the Juilliard of the West. And I was teaching there, and everybody and all the faculty in the school was focused on the pursuit of excellence. And I noticed that I just didn't resonate with it. I felt it was quite elitist, in fact. I noticed I was looking for something more, and it actually came as a complete surprise. Someone said, one of the board members was also asking themselves the same question, and they were involved in Skid Row at the John Wesley Health Clinic as a board member. And they said to the staff at Colburn, anybody would like to teach a program in Skid Row? We should do music. I mean, what are we doing as this Juilliard of the West? We can afford it. We have resources. Let's bring music to Skid Row. It's six blocks away from Bunker Hill, which is like this hill of elite wealth, and then here six blocks away is the epicenter of homelessness in the nation, let alone LA. And I was the only faculty that was like, this seems like something that really serves a purpose that's beyond just pursuit of excellence, but pursuit of something deeper, something more. But I was young. I was 23, 24. I was a very young music teacher at the time. So I said yes. I jumped in and I met Christopher Mack. He was an outreach worker, old enough to be my grandfather. He was working in Skid Row for 15 years, knew everybody in the streets and the shelters and more. He had a nickname. They called him the Urban Sage. And Chris said, I'll bring the people if you bring the music. And so that's what we did. And we started showing up at the little conference room in the back of the clinic. Christopher would bring the people and I would bring the music and the arts education. And we would just show up week by week by week. And we did it for volunteer until we finally applied for nonprofit status in 2018. Started in 2014. And if that brings us to today, we've now officially turned 10 years old as a program.
Happy anniversary to the Urban Voices Project. What do you remember very best from those early days of the Urban Voices project?
Great question. You know, okay, fun fact, we were not called Urban Voices Project the first year. We were called the Wesley Colburn Singers, John Wesley Clinic, Colburn School. We didn't have creativity in the moment. So we called ourselves the Wesley Colburn Singers. And if you go and Google Wesley Colburn Singers on anywhere, it'll be the first thing on Google will be that within 8 weeks of our program, we had a front cover story of the LA Times come out on Thanksgiving Day. And it was like the Cinderella story of our very first performance. A reporter followed our Gail Holland, who's a very famous LA Times reporter, specifically for downtown. She would follow us in rehearsals all the way through this first performance that was for the Wesley Gala. And we were working with people who were coming out of tents. So we had to get them suits and tuxedos from the thrift shop. We would go to the YMCA for showers, and then we'd go up to the 51st floor of City Club, LA City Club or something. And we performed this extravagant ballroom gala with incredible, lots of fundraising and money. And then I remember we were at the bottom floor, back in the garage and on the sidewalk, and people were looking around at each other. They're like, so now what? And I said, well, if you guys show up next week, I'll show up too. And I just remember them walking away towards the bus stop, ready to go back to Skid Row in their tuxedos. And it was a very humbling moment. You know, the Cinderella story doesn't end happily ever after with Urban Voices Project. The work continues and the people's journeys continue. You know, it's even though that many of my singers have, the good news is many of them do go through the lived experience, but then have find themselves housing, permanent housing and so forth. Even now, we know that permanent housing doesn't always mean life gets easier. Lots of the choir members have remained impoverished in many different ways, are remaining on Medi-Cal and welfare, and they're depending on services. So it's been really hard. And, you know, homelessness affects a lot of seniors. So there's not really anywhere to go, or they have disabilities. So even once they get housed, there's not much of a future. So when you have this choir that's at least taking their stories and using it to change lives and impressions and to be able to humanize and personalize this experience for the general public, it brings a huge sense of purpose for people who, even after they find housing, still struggle.
And in fact, and I promise we will get to talking about the concert in a minute, but your TEDx talk brings up some pretty startling points, up to and including the fact that most of us, were we to become homeless tomorrow, wouldn't have social services because we don't qualify. We'd fall through the cracks.
Yes, the cracks are like canyons, I always say. And we're always, what I've told people in the past is we never planned for this as a society. We never planned ahead. There was no city planning session where we're sitting down and saying to ourselves, in 20 years, we're going to have 40% more homelessness. You know, nobody sits there and thinks that way and plans resources to accommodate. You know, and since the Reagan days, a lot of people have said there's a lot of different catalysts over the history of our timeline that I won't get into because some of it could be political. But for the last several decades, we are always playing catch up to ourselves as far as a society with homelessness. We're always reactive rather than preemptive. And it's unfortunate, but it's true. And what that causes is that when you do fall into homelessness, it's a pretty fractured system. It's a system that's being patched together through some county services and city services, some federal services, nonprofit services, which nonprofits struggle so hard just to stay funded, let alone to stay coordinated, you know? And they also have missions that are hard to bring together. To have a coordinated system of even tracking who needs services and who these people are that are out on our streets is incredibly robustly complex and failing us constantly. So when you're facing all of these issues, healthcare, housing, and employment are all services that see this individual as broken. I think I said in the TEDx that you feel like a number, but what I've been saying lately is that a service is almost innately something that says you don't have this thing, so I'll give you this thing. This is a gap in your life. This is what's broken about you. It's about what is fractured and trying to repair you. And being told about how broken you are in so many assets of society and the structure is quite exhausting and depressing and dismantling of hope and purpose. So the power of music and the power of the arts is when someone walks into an artistic space, the first thing isn't, hey, you're broken. I have this thing that you need. I'm going to give it to you if you meet these conditions, if I even have it to spare. Like, that's not the narrative. The narrative is, hey, you already have a beautiful voice inside you. You have innate creativity, expression, artistry. The voice is there. Whether you thought you can sing or not doesn't matter. You are a whole human person. You are not broken because you can make art with us. And you can do that right now. And to feel that way, after just the whole world declaring that you are a broken being, is so important, not just in that first moment, but to have that as a therapeutic reminder every weekly rehearsal that you come to. It reminds you to fight through the BS, excuse my language, you know, of this fractured system that was not, that's constantly playing catch up and was never ready for these numbers and this oppressive system that we have, especially with unaffordable housing and an economy, the way it treats the people who fall through the cracks.
Liav explained that the work of the Urban Voices Project extends far beyond the choir's performances.
It's pretty vast. I've always told people the choir is the face of the organization, but the workshops and the programs are the heart. So the choir is what a lot of people see and interact with because it does go out and perform and spread the word. So we do have this choir that also rehearses. They're doing bookings, private bookings and public bookings, but always with this activist mission. So we consider ourselves an activist choir. The mission is always either raising awareness for homelessness, personalizing it through our stories, or promoting arts and health, seeing how arts is a part of wellness and public health and a holistic approach to, you know, ending the homelessness crisis. And we also are activists for Skid Row, which is a fairly marginalized community geopolitically in many ways. So that's just one. We have music education classes because so many of the people we worked with have aspired to better themselves as students of an art form and something that they're passionate about, which is so, again, brings so much purpose to an individual. Rather than sitting with a case manager week by week trying to qualify for housing, they actually can improve something that makes them happy, you know, and see skills grow in this hobby. Or some of them, you know, pursue it as work and as professional artists, even outside of the choir. Then there's also wellness and music meditation programs. So if you wanted to go really focused into the wellness aspect, we offer that as well. There's open mics, especially out on the sidewalk in Skid Row, but all over we do different events where people can then showcase their work. And that we have actually taken the feeling of being able to showcase yourself as an artist, and we've amplified it with two different yearly festivals. One is our coffee house program, where we get a grant to give all of our 25 choir members a scholarship for voice lessons for 8 weeks, and then they get to share their song out, kind of like a recital or a talent show. And that happens every summer with a performance at the end of the summer. And then in the spring, we take the open mic concept of getting people to sing, and we take it to the whole city of downtown LA with a festival called Come On Sing. And the concept is Skid Row artists paired with LA artists all over build these temporary stages in Little Tokyo, Historic Core, Bunker Hill, all the downtown neighborhoods surrounding Skid Row. And they perform in high traffic areas in the public streets or in courtyards and plazas. And they're encouraging people to do open mic or sing-alongs from even just the pedestrian traffic. And that happens all day long on the Come On Sing Festival day at the same time at all of these different stages. So it's just basically one downtown-wide sing-along open mic. So that's Come On Sing, our coffee house program. Actually, another one I'm going to mention is a December 21st holiday called Home Festival. And it's our holiday program. That one's more like a, not a farmer's market, but like a festival where there's a bunch of arts and craft tables. There's a bunch of artists, Skid Row artists, selling their artwork in a marketplace. And then there's an open mic. And then we have a choir concert to finish, free food, free services. And it's focused on arts and wellness as a festival. And that's in, this year it's going to be in Little Tokyo, but the Skid Row and Little Tokyo community is producing it together. And that's another one of our events we do every year that's a regular program. Finally, it's very Christmassy. For people that have nowhere to be on Christmas Day, we always get volunteers to sign up for Christmas caroling through Skid Row at the different rescue missions. And we take the choir and anyone that volunteers and signs up, and we do a 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. walkthrough of Skid Row, bringing instruments and holiday cheer. And there's a lot of people that are having holiday lunches at the different rescue missions and so forth. So that's our Christmas caroling crawl.
Wow. Let's be sure and give up a link where people can find out more, first of all, about a holiday called Home, anything about your upcoming coffee house, and of course, caroling on Christmas Day.
Absolutely. Really, the best way to stay with us is our Instagram, Facebook, or our newsletter on our website. All of it is simple. It's just Urban Voices Project and urbanvoicesproject.org or at Urban Voices Project for the socials.
What about the 24th? You're going to be part of the LA County Holiday Celebration. What's going on right now as Urban Voices Project gets ready for that?
We're so excited. We are pulling together a beautiful piece written by Stevie Wonder. Many of us have heard it. And it's such a powerful piece because it's from the get-go. It's saying one day there will be no more wars, or, you know, men will no longer be boys, you know, act like boys. It's like asking for peace. It's truly asking for peace. But it's also asking us to wake up a little bit and love the neighbor and extend kindness, which, of course, like, why do we have to wait till Christmas to be nice to each other? But
great point.
Yeah. But it is fitting for a choir like ours to be singing that message at the Christmas Eve celebration. So we're preparing that. It's going to feature some soloists in the group and then the whole group. And we'll give it a little bit of energy as we give it our spin. But that's it. We're just performing that one song, but hopefully it will still be a highlight of the evening. For the choir members, you know, being on television, we're a non-audition group, which means we have beginner level singers that join us who our choir is their first experience with a performing ensemble, as well as we have people who have had professional lives as artists. So they're really going to enjoy themselves a lot, I believe, beautifully being the immaculate professionals they are on stage for television. And it's the same for most of these groups because so many of them are community groups. There's high school groups and such. But it always feels just a little bit special to be part of a television production. I think also when you are an LA-based native, or still if you're just in LA at all, you know, being around TV programming always is exciting and has its feeling like you're in it. You're in the industry, right? So there's going to be some joy that just comes from that a little bit. There's going to be a lot of joy that also comes from sharing the stage with so many diverse productions. There's so many groups from so many different cultures, and it's always an honor. Also, our group, this is the third time Urban Voices Project has sung for the holiday celebration. So some of my members are experienced with this, and they're just happy to be back. It almost feels like a tradition. And I've been lucky enough to be part of this show, I think, 9 times now, because the years when I'm not doing it with Urban Voices, I'm part of other programs and other ensembles, and I get to participate there as well. So I feel a little bit like this is a holiday tradition myself. And I also grew up in LA, so I grew up watching it when I was a kid. You know, my mom would turn it on, and, you know, we're a Jewish household, so the once or twice during the whole 3-hour show that there was a Hanukkah song, she was like, look, look, they have a Hanukkah song. There's a Hanukkah song. But, yeah.
What's one of your absolute favorite memories from being a part of the LA County Holiday Celebration of the past, with or without Urban Voices?
Getting off the stage. No.
You're giving me a bad time now.
No. There, to be 100% honest, there is anxiety of it being live TV. And I think that when it's over, you do have a wave of adrenaline that comes over you when it's done. That's actually, it's both relieving because the anxiety is released, but then you get to reflect on what just happened. Like, oh my gosh. So I do think that both for the tease of it, but also genuinely, when you walk off the stage, everything that led up to that moment felt just so hurry up and wait and hustle and bustle. But then you get to go back and you get to watch it and you get to be like, wow, that's us. We're on that huge stage for so many people to see. And it's a cool experience. And you don't forget it, you know? And I have to say, like 8 or 9 times later, I still feel like each one is incredibly unique and special. I can't, you know, other small favorite moments were the moments backstage, probably, when you're just connecting and sitting in the green room. But I would say that, like, you know what, here, I'll give you one more small anecdote. Watching people who've never been on that stage before walk out onto that stage during the tech rehearsal for the very first time, when they've never been on such a big stage ever in their life, and with a huge crew around them, and you watch them walk out and they're in like awe, you know, and it just to see what it takes to put something on like this and a performer who's it's their first time performing in such a production. I do get a lot of joy from watching them and being like, yeah, there's 100 people here trying to make this thing go, just backstage crew and whatnot. And it's cool to see it, the backside of it all work, you know.
When you get somebody who comes in, they say, I can't sing. What do you say?
In general, I don't believe in such a thing. I believe that there's professional singers and then there's professional shower singers, but it all comes from experience. And what I do say is this. In fact, one of my other jobs is I do coach. I'm a speaker for Los Angeles County Office of Education because I focus on reminding elementary school teachers how to bring music into the classroom, even if they think of themselves as a non-musician. The first thing I have to do to break through to them is that you can sing. You are a singer innately. And if you can talk, you can sing anatomically. But secondly, most of the reason why people think that their pitch is off or their sound is raspy is partly because they haven't been doing it. They haven't tried enough. They haven't been putting enough hours in singing and singing consciously with active listening. And one of the reasons why was that someone at some point in their life said something negative to them. And it was more than likely an adult, not another peer. And usually this happens around 4 or 5 years old, maybe 6. So I remind people, go back to your 4-year-old self. Did your 4-year-old self ever say, I can't sing? Think about it. Dot, did your 4-year-old self of Dot Cannon ever say, oh, I shouldn't be singing, I can't sing? I don't have a voice that should be singing at 4.
No, I had records and I would sing the whole songs that were on them.
Something happens and it's elementary school, some choir teacher that's old school and does not know how to nurture, or a parent or just some adult that said, oh, maybe you should mouth the words or maybe sit in the back of the choir. And that's mostly because they didn't want to make the effort and take the time to help someone blossom and be the educator that they needed to be in that moment. So that's typically the reason why someone then shuts down, stops trying to sing, believes the lie that they're not a good singer, and to the point where it starts to manifest to come true because their voice, their muscles are literally not being used to sing, and they're different than talking muscles in some ways. So if you don't sing growing up, then it'll be much harder to catch up later. Not impossible, but that's what I remind people of. Just go back in time. Remember why we sing. We don't sing to sound good, and that's a construct. That's a social construct. We sing because it feels good to sing.
And I've noticed on a lot of your social media, you're encouraging your audience to get involved and sing right along with the Urban Voices Project.
Always. In fact, I hate even calling Urban Voices a performance group or a music activation group.
Oh, I love that. For the next 10 years of the Urban Voices Project, what would you really love to have happen?
Well, obviously, you know, homelessness is a little bit at the center of what we are, but I would love for homelessness to go away. And we always thought to ourselves, this is a 10,000 foot pole dream, 10,000 foot, yeah. We always thought to ourselves, even if homelessness is solved one day, that we would love to stay part of public health and remind people of the wellness benefits and the music of the power of the voice and expression and the wellness in it. So we would still be in clinics and spaces like that, I think. Or like places, sanctuaries such as the libraries and whatnot. But I think that if that's not the case and we continue to do this work in social service settings such as shelters and other social service spaces, we'd like to help all of LA and the social service network really advocate for music as being a holistic approach to bringing purpose into individuals' lives. I think that I can see one day we get into law that there could be what we call social prescribing, which does exist in other countries, where a doctor can write you a prescription for voice lessons or for choir class or for guitar class because they recognize the therapeutic value of it all. and where we can start to do away with some of the stereotypes that come with music and singing, of who it belongs to, if it's elitist or not, and what class of people have access to it and whatnot. So I think those things, I'd like to see them change. And for Urban Voices specifically, I'd love to see us grow, that we have programming in so many of these safe spaces around the county, and as well as a choir that's just constantly reminding people of the mission of what music is capable of.
How can people best support you in that mission?
Well, we are a nonprofit. Anything helps, but a donation and being a supporter of the programs both help the choir do its work, as well as keeping those weekly programs alive in many of our locations. If there's interest in booking the choir, we are accessible to anyone to book. We do use the booking fees to help pay the artists, and then whatever's left over to continue funding the programs as well. And then also, sometimes we just need volunteers and audience. So if we have these special events like the festivals, we need volunteers and we need audience. So come be a fan, or plan to work a table for a little bit at one of our festivals, or if you have special skills, get in touch with us and we'd love to work with you. And also, there's people that if they just like to sing, I say just come to a program and sing. And even if you don't have unhoused experience, it's always better singing in a group than by yourself, is how we feel. And even if you're just there to fill in the numbers a little bit of a joyful, friendly, gentle community of singers, no matter who's the journeys are in the room, that would also go a long way. And you would be doing community work by being in community in that way.
I'm going to brag on you a little bit. Your bio says that you sang backup for the Rolling Stones in 2016. What did you as a performer bring from that experience to your work right now with Urban Voices? What'd you learn from performing with the Rolling Stones that you use today?
So to be fair, I only sang with them on two concerts, and it was the one at the Time Staples Center, and then the other one was at the stadium down in San Diego, and it was part of an 8-person backup choir. So I was one of the choir member backup singers in that small choir group. But man, when you come out, it was literally a choir that came up on a lift in the middle of the stage. But when we were lifted up and all of a sudden we're on stage and the lights come up and you look out, 20,000 people watching and screaming, it's kind of surreal because you don't see an audience. You see a night sky filled with the glimmer of stars just sparkling at you with an intense flashing lights all over the place. You don't see people. You see literally an aesthetic. You see a whole wall of people, of little dots. So partly to take what I've learned from that, to go back to the fame thing, I think that it's such a beautiful thing to have an artist so successful that they can reach, fill a room with 20,000 people. But what I also learned is that it's not any more or less valuable than a room of 200 people, for example, 200 listeners, or a room of 20 people, sometimes even a room of two. And as an artist, you have to remember, no matter what the size of the room, there can always be that one person who really needed to hear you today, who really needed to hear that one lyric in that one song, who might have been on the brink of suicide, who might have been having a hard time. And whether you realized or not, that personal connection they were making with you so intimately, they needed you to rescue them in that moment, and they were able to connect to you or to what they needed through the music. And I know it's powerful to do it in big stadiums, but I got the honor of doing it in the clinic every Wednesday at 2 p.m. in Skid Row, Joshua House Clinic, where we have the community room where we do our community jam every week. And sometimes I have three people. And I learned also by watching people like Mick Jagger, who just has so much energy no matter what he does. You have to convince yourself first before you can convince anyone else. And sometimes when I'm leading a program and there's three people in the room, I try to remind myself that I need to give the same performance as if there was 20,000 people in the room. With that, you can make a connection. And so that's what I've learned, is giving it my all, sometimes to my own detriment because I get a hoarse throat after a day of just regular programming. but Like putting it all out there is important for me in the way that I walk through the world. So
Liav offered a final thought.
It'll be great to see you watch us on holiday celebration. It'd be better to see you catch us all year long. And in Orange County, we'll be having a concert January 18th. And then we'll have a 10-year celebration festival concert on March 9th. So there's opportunities to stay with us throughout the year.
Liav, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Dot. I really appreciated this.
You and I have been listening to singer, songwriter, composer, arranger, and multi-instrumentalist Liav Sofer, founder and artistic director of the Urban Voices Project. Be sure to follow Urban Voices Project on social media at Urban Voices Project and to check out their website, urbanvoicesproject.org, where you'll see information about their upcoming programs. And as Liav mentioned, they need volunteers. If you have the time and you'd like to get involved and support a great cause, find out more about sharing your talents and helping them make a difference. Meanwhile, you'll get a chance to hear the Urban Voices Project Choir perform Stevie Wonder's Someday at Christmas in the 65th annual LA County Holiday Celebration at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion on Christmas Eve. This is a free concert starting at 3 p.m. and running until 6 p.m. on Tuesday, December 24th. Advance tickets are required for admission. Find out more at holidaycelebration.org. While the website says advance reservations are currently full due to high demand, you can sign up to be notified if additional reservations become available in advance, and they will have a standby line. That's holidaycelebration.org. And if you can't travel to the concert in person, it's going to be live streamed on PBS at pbssocal.org with an encore on Christmas night from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Pacific time. And that concludes this edition of Noelophile. Thank you for listening, and may your Christmas season be filled with warmth, music, and inspiration.